Live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's the Smash Brothers, Robbie Stanley and Adam Vingan. With the latest on your Nashville Predators, this is Smashville's best sports talk
on ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into the Smash Brothers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Vingan here on a groundbreaking day for the Nashville Predators. Is it really groundbreaking? Not really, but that was a great game last night. Adam, what's going on, man? How are you?
I am great. Yes, groundbreaking might not be the word I would use, but it was exhilarating.
It was exhilarating.
That was something that I can't recall seeing in all of my years of watching hockey, at least in person. A legitimate buzzer beater, 0.1 seconds left on the clock when Mikhail Granlund slammed that puck past David Rittich, and the Predators, who looked dead when they were down 3-2 with under 50 seconds left in the game, not only send the game to overtime, but win a immensely important game against the Calgary Flames 4-3 to maintain their wild card spot in the Western Conference.
The emotional swing of that game and what could have been versus what ended up actually happening, I think, was so interesting to watch. Because if you think back to October on Halloween night here at Bridgestone Arena, Calgary did something very similar to the Predators, what the Predators did to Calgary last night. They scored and tied the game late in that game, and then Matthew Tkachuk scored a brilliant goal in overtime between his legs with like a second left on the clock to win that game back on Halloween night. The Predators returned the favor last night, and you're battling back, and quite frankly, I didn't think the Predators played all that well in the second period, and even to begin the third period, I thought Saros had to make some really good point-blank saves to keep them in that game. And then you get to a place where Roman Josi ties the game. It's 2-2. You're feeling good about going to overtime and at least getting a point. And Backlund comes down and just makes an incredible play to set up that goal to give the Flames a 3-2 lead with 42.9 seconds left. And you're thinking to yourself, man, that's just a punch directly to the midsection of this Nashville Predators hockey team. And to be able to stick with it, make a play at the end there, and by the end, we mean the very end with 0.1 seconds remaining on the clock. That's the type of game that earlier this season, I'm pretty sure they don't win. And this is kind of the perfect example, and you touched on this a little bit last night, of what John Hines has been trying to preach to this group in terms of the mental toughness and the fortitude he wants them to play with.
And when you look back at that game on October 31st, the Predators were up 4-1 entering the third period. The Flames tied the game. The Predators took a 5-4 lead. The Flames tied it and then won it in overtime. And you can look at that game as a turning point in the season, because the Predators, I think, were 8-3-1 at the time of that game. They lose that game in overtime, and from there, they've been basically playing 500 hockey. So you wonder if it almost has a reverse effect heading into the stretch run, where they win the game in the fashion that they do, and you wonder if this is the launching pad for the Predators down the stretch to earn a playoff spot for the sixth consecutive year. And you're right. Punch to the gut is one way of saying it. Kick to the groin is another.
Yeah.
Certainly, the Predators, I think you said it best. They sort of returned the favor. They kept that receipt from October 31st and won the game. And we'll talk about a little bit more in depth what you were referring to with John Hines and the mental fortitude that he has been preaching since he was hired by the Nashville Predators. But when I was watching that game last night, especially at the end, and I wrote about this today on The Athletic, it did remind me a little bit of the 2017 team, easy for me to say, in regards to the certain magic that team had. And the Predators really haven't had that this year.
Hardly at all.
So you wonder if this, as I said before, sort of cultivates that magic feeling. Because when you look at the standings, the Predators have one fewer point at this point in the season than they did 3 years ago when they finished in the second wild card spot and went to the Stanley Cup final. And realistically, those two teams have very little in common.
Yes.
In terms of the experience, in terms of the payroll, in terms of whatever you want to talk about. There are common players between the two teams. Many of the core members of the team are still here. that were on that team.
Very different spots in their careers.
Exactly. But just that feeling that the Predators were able to tie a game at the literal last second and then win it, you wonder if perhaps this team has it within them to make a similar run down the stretch as the 2017 team did in ultimately getting to the Stanley Cup final. It's still very early,
yes,
but it's promising that this team last night, facing the stakes that were on the line in that game, when you consider what was happening around the league, Winnipeg won, the Wild won, so they would have fallen out of that wild card spot.
Do you get full 2 points for playing the Red Wings? Like, shouldn't you get like a point and a half maybe? They're so bad.
I think the final score was 7-1.
You got beat 7-1 by the Minnesota Wild if you're the Detroit Red Wings. I mean, that's just tough. But Kevin Fiala looks like Wayne Gretzky right now skating out there.
Right, but Mikael Granlund looks fantastic too. So it's hard to argue with the results. And we will talk about Mikael Granlund as we sit here just because, of course, he had 2 goals last night. He made NHL history last night. I believe he became the 4th player in NHL history to score a game-tying goal with fewer than 10 seconds left and then won the game in overtime as well. The last player to do that was Marian Gaborik in Game 1 of the 2014 second round. The other two players to do that, Marco Sturm in November of 2000 and Neil Broughton, not sure which, November 26th, 1983. So it had been a while, and there have been very few people who have accomplished what Mikael Granlund did last night. And we've spent a lot of time talking about Mikael Granlund since the coaching change because of how rejuvenated he looks. He has 11 goals since John Hines came. 4 of them, including last night, of course, are game winners.
Yeah.
And it just seems like whatever stylistic changes that John Hines has made and the opportunity that he has given Mikael Granlund. Last time I checked, his ice time was up by more than 2 minutes per game since the coaching change. Whatever John Hines is doing, it is absolutely working for Mikael Granlund.
There's no question about it. It was the definition of clutch daddy last night from Mikael Granlund in that game. That goal to tie that game, I was so just kind of captivated watching it because from our vantage point watching it, it crosses the goal line. Everybody on the ice is going crazy. I don't know if I've seen Ryan Johansson that excited all season long. It was really funny to watch, but we couldn't tell how much time was left on the clock. The green light was on, signifying the end of the game, the buzzer. And I was just kind of watching and waiting to go back to see what the time was going to look like when they reviewed it, because obviously when there's 1/10 of a second left on the clock, that's a pretty close margin. And I was just saying, like, can you imagine how much of another gut punch this is going to be for this team if they think they've tied this game and you go back and review it and you miss out on tying the game by like 1/10 of a second. Luckily, this time the break went their way because there were a couple times in that game where the breaks did not go their way. Backlund scored a goal that basically just fluttered in off of Mattias Ekholm on the way towards the net. So that was a perfect example of Mikael Granlund getting a break this time around, and he's worked hard to earn those breaks with the way he's played over the course of the past 4 or 5 weeks.
Well, of course, the trade deadline was on Monday, and there was a lot of attention on Mikael Granlund regarding whether or not David Poile would attempt to trade him while his value was high.
Yep.
And David Poile ultimately decided, as he said to us and other members of the media, that he felt like he wanted this group to stay together, which we've heard from him before.
Yep.
Much to the chagrin of some fans.
And lots of people were really upset about it the other day.
They were.
Man, were they upset.
And if I recall correctly, Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet was on with Darren Donick and Chase on Thursday. And if I remember what he said accurately, he reported that David Poile had set a certain price for Mikael Granlund and Craig Smith. I think he said a couple of second rounders.
Yeah.
And if he wasn't going to receive that, he wasn't going to move them. And of course, it's just one game. But it looks like an incredibly smart decision by David Poile to hold on to Mikael Granlund. Now, we'll get into whether or not Mikael Granlund can stay on this team past the season later on in the show, just because the salary cap math doesn't suggest that's possible.
Right.
But we'll talk about what may or may not happen or what could happen to change that. But You know, Mikhail Granlund seems much happier in the John Hines system, just in terms of what he's being asked to do and how it accentuates his particular talents. So, you know, I think the next closest goal scorer since John Hines took over is Philip Forsberg, who has 7 goals. So Mikhail Granlund, clearly the most productive player, definitely the most productive forward under John Hines.
Another thing about that game that surprised me last night, and this is, I think, more of a compliment to Roman Josi in the season that he's had. He scored a goal last night, which we got to looking at it. Was that the first goal he scored since December 23rd?
Yes.
First goal in 2020 that he scored, which is just crazy to think about when you kind of acknowledge the type of fantastic Norris Trophy caliber of a season that Roman Josi has had. Just a huge goal at the time, and we didn't know how huge it was going to be. You know, to be able to tie that game 2-2, obviously you don't want to give up the lead after that. But Roman Josi continuing to come up big for this team in big moments.
Absolutely. And I was shocked when we looked it up and it was before Christmas since Roman Josi last scored, because as you mentioned, he keeps piling on the points, but you don't realize that it had been 2 months, more than 2 months since he scored a goal.
A lot of assists,
but it came at the right time. We've got a great show tonight. My colleague at The Athletic, Ryan Clark, who covers the Colorado Avalanche, will join us at 6:30 to preview tomorrow's game, which I'm going to say many times tonight is at 6 p.m.
Yes.
Central Time tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Not the usual 7 p.m., 6 p.m.
If you show up at 7 p.m. tomorrow, you're probably going to be upset.
Yes.
You will have missed a period of action there.
Yes, and it's going to be a good game because Predators Avalanche games are usually good, except for the last one when the Predators gave up 9 goals.
Yeah, and I wonder how much that's in the back of their mind when they're thinking about that. I would think at least a little bit at that point.
It might be. It's been a few months, but it might be lingering there. But when we come back, have the Predators turned the proverbial corner? I know it's a conversation that sometimes can be hard to have, but with the way they've been playing over the past month, is it safe to say that the Predators have turned the corner? I'm Adam Vingan. That's Robbie Stanley. You're listening to the Smash Brothers on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to the Smash Brothers on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan and Robbie Stanley. We were just discussing the Predators' miraculous 4-3 overtime victory against the Calgary Flames last night at Bridgestone Arena, a victory that was their 10th in their past 15 games. They are 10-4-1 since, I believe, January 29th, which was their victory in Washington against the Capitals. Those 21 points are tied, I believe, with the Vegas Golden Knights for the best record or most points in the Western Conference over that span. So, Robbie, I think it's time to have the conversation.
Oh, boy.
It's time to have the talk. Not the talk you're thinking about. I hope that you're a married man. I hope you've had that talk by
now. I've had that one.
Okay, good. I want to talk about whether or not we can say that the Nashville Predators, the 2019-2020 Nashville Predators, have turned the corner.
Oh, it's so tough because the results would tell you yes. I mean, what are they? 6-1-1 their last 8. I mean, they've got points in 7 out of 8 games. The results would tell you yes, that they have turned the corner. They're starting to win games at home, which, as we know, Adam, was a major bugaboo for this team earlier in the season. They've started to win those with much more regularity as of late. But I still watch them play, and maybe it's just with the expectations you know that you have for this group, but I watch them play and say, this team has more to give. This team can be better than they are right now. Their team, still with their top guys especially, has a lot more, maybe 2 or 3 levels they can get to. So I don't know if I'm willing to say they've turned the corner as of yet. Now, are they playing better? Sure, they absolutely are. They're winning games. Even when they're not playing well, they're winning games, which I think is important. Now, one thing that has stood out to me over this last stretch here, and it happened in that home game against St. Louis, it happened against Carolina where they lost, it happened in the second period against Columbus, and it happened for the large majority of last night's game against Calgary, particularly in the second and early third periods. They're spending a lot of time in their own zone. They're spending a lot of time on defense. They're spending a lot of time. And even last night, they gave up quite a few quality looks as well. And UC Saros had to make very good saves, which the good news is their goaltending is starting to come around, I think, both with Saros and Rene. But I know that John Hines has put more of a focus and an emphasis on quality over quantity, and that's great. I still think there's room for more quantity in the offensive zone and spending more time in the offensive zone, which will in turn lead to more of those quality chances that you're looking for. But they're still spending a little bit too much time in the defensive zone as of late for my liking.
There was a lot of puck chasing last night.
A lot of it.
I feel like, especially in the early going, the Flames seemed to have possession of the puck for most of that period. If the Predators got it back, it wasn't for very long. The Flames seemed to definitely dictate the pace of play, even though the Predators ended up leading after 1-0 on a goal by Colton Sissons off a great play behind the net by Colin Blackwell.
Who's been awesome,
he has been great in his role. Definitely a spark plug. But I would agree about there are still some things that need to be tightened up or improved in order for me to fully believe that this team has turned the corner. I think just based on the record, the fact that they have points in 11 of 15 and they've won 3 games in a row again, which we know before they did it the most recent time, they hadn't done it in more than 3 months.
Right.
So the fact that they are stringing wins together is a good sign. And the one thing that I keep going back to is this team has stayed afloat despite the fact that the goaltending hasn't played well. And despite the fact that Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene and Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson have not played to their capabilities, they've maintained their spot in the playoff race, you know, with great play by players like Colin Blackwell, Rocco Grimaldi, Nick Bonino, Craig Smith, Roman Josi. Ryan Ellis has looked studly since he returned from injury.
Very studly.
Studly indeed. So the fact that the Predators remain in the race despite those aforementioned forwards not playing well, I think it bodes well if they finally do find their game and everything else stays the same. The goaltending continues to improve. The depth scoring is there. But if you get Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, and Victor Arvidsson back to their normal levels of production, then I definitely think this team has a 2017-like run in them, as we were discussing in the previous segment. Of course, the operative word in all of that is if.
And it's a big if.
And it's a big if, just because we don't really have that much time left in the regular season for them to figure it out. When you look at those four players, are there any that you see starting to make that transition, or do you think they all have a lot more to give?
Well, I think they all have a lot more to give, but I do think Forsberg, the numbers are what they are with him, and he's got 18 goals so far this year. You would expect him to be around that 30-goal mark. I think he's playing okay as of late. And last night, I thought he was fine. I'm not as worried about Forsberg as I am about Johansson and Duchene. Those two guys, to me, especially Johansson, when he's on, we've seen how dominant of a player he can be at his top level and at his peak level here in Nashville. The problem is, he hasn't been at that top level very much at all this season. So when you're talking about four guys waiting to get back to that top level, at this point with 19 games left in the season, is it realistic to think that all four are going to get back there at the same time? Probably not. I think at this point, if you're the Predators, and certainly if you're a Predators fan, you'd probably be happy with two of the four getting hot and playing up to their capabilities at the same time. Because to your point, Adam, think about how well they've played all season long, and the large majority of that stretch, these four guys have not been as productive as we've grown accustomed to that being. And they've still been able to stay afloat and get in a playoff spot despite that. Now, a lot of that is Roman Josi. A lot of that is the line of Bonino, Grimaldi, and Smith playing as well as they have all season long. But if you can get two of those guys to get up to a level where they're being consistently productive, and which is what I think that's what you would identify as what you're looking for out of them, is consistent production. If you can get that and keep everything else the same as what it's been, and you're building on the goaltending that's starting to come around, Saros has been good as of late. Rene in his last 2-3 starts, I think, has been exceptional. If that can continue to transpire and they can ride that heading into the playoffs, they're absolutely going to be dangerous because the Western Conference is pretty wide open. I mean, we're going to talk about the Avalanche here coming up in just a few minutes. And they are certainly a very good team, but they've got some warts as well. They got a lot of injuries that they're going through. St. Louis has been up and down, even though they've been at the top of the division all season long. Dallas started off horribly. They figured it out a little bit since then, but even even then, their offense hasn't been that great. So you don't feel like there's just this overbearing team in the Western Conference that you have no chance of getting by if the Predators are playing up to their potential.
I want to follow up with something that you mentioned just now. If you had to pick two of those four forwards, Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, and Victor Arvidsson, and you had the choice of only two to improve their play or reach their, you know, reach their peak potential or production, however you want to call it, which two would you pick in terms of how important it is to the team?
That's a good question. I think Philip Forsberg would be in that group automatically just because of his ability to take over a game. I kind of struggle after that between Johansson and Duchene.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably go with Johansson I think his top level, we saw it last year, I think was a perfect example. He had 50 assists last year, and he still continued to drive play at 5-on-5 offensively, even with Forsberg out, even with Arvidsson out. A lot of times last year, he really kept that team afloat with the way that he was playing. I still contend to this day that other than Pekka in the playoffs in 2017, he was their best player until he got hurt. And I don't even think really that close.
No question.
So if I had to pick two, it would be those two, because I think when those two are at their top level, it really transforms what this team can do offensively. Obviously, Victor Arvidsson is very valuable. When he's on, his speed is a weapon and his goal production is a weapon that they could desperately use right now. Matt Duchene and his top level, we saw probably last year what his top level looks like, and it's a 70-point guy who also was a point-per-game player in the playoffs. Certainly could be useful there. But to me, to answer that question, it would be Johansson and Forsberg. And Forsberg specifically, because when he's hot and when he's on, he's shown he can really take a game over at any time. And he's probably the one guy, I think, on the Predators, other than Josi and Ellis, who can really do that.
And that's what I was going to follow up with is, when Philip Forsberg is playing at his best, he does have the ability to take over games where, just based on his sheer natural talent alone, he can score huge goals and make amazing moves and carry this team on his back. And we've seen that. I recall, I believe it was game one of the Colorado series a couple years ago, made an incredible move around Sam Girard to score a big goal. And I'm probably forgetting some. I think he scored some other
nifty
goals.
Another one in that series, yeah.
Yes.
Where he just went coast to coast on the entire Colorado Avalanche team.
We haven't seen that with regularity from Philip Forsberg, I think, in the last couple years.
No.
Not just this season, but last season too. And if he can return to that level, you know, that would be fantastic for the Nashville Predators. And I agree with you on Ryan Johansson. It's a hard choice between Johansson and Duchene, but I feel like we've seen Duchene at one point this year at his top level at the beginning of the season.
The first
couple weeks of the season, he was playing lights out. We still haven't seen that this year from Ryan Johansson. So at least we know that Matt Duchene can, and not to say that Ryan Johansson can't, but we haven't seen it this year.
Right.
So if he can find it in the stretch run and in the playoffs and play similarly to how he did pre-injury in the 2017 playoffs, you know, this team definitely has multiple levels that they can reach that they haven't yet.
I think everybody looks back to Johansson in terms of how he played in that 2017 series against Chicago, where he just totally dominated Jonathan Toews. And for a lot of people, myself included, that was an eye-opener of, oh man, okay, this is exactly what the Predators have been missing throughout their franchise. It's hard to be that at that level and play that well every night, but he's got to at least get close to that point as they move ahead here to at least give his team a chance to be dangerous in the playoffs, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why he's paid the big bucks.
That is why he's paid the big bucks, no question about it. When we come back, we're going to delve into some conversation about the Colorado Avalanche. They will play against the Predators tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. And as Adam has pointed out, 6:00 game time tomorrow. It's very important that you remember that. We don't want you showing up at 7:00. We'll talk to Ryan Clark from The Athletic, who covers the Colorado Avalanche. We'll do that next. You're listening to The Smash Brothers with Robbie Stanley and Adam Vingan here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back to The Smash Brothers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm Adam Vingan alongside Robbie Stanley, and now joined by my colleague at The Athletic, Ryan Clark, who covers the Colorado Avalanche, who play the Nashville Predators tomorrow at 6 p.m. Remember, 6 p.m. start tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. And Ryan, I wanted to start with the Avalanche's approach to the trade deadline, just because there was a lot of talk surrounding the Avalanche and how they could have been one of the teams to make a splash at the deadline. Ultimately, they decided to trade for Vladislav Domestikov from the Ottawa Senators and Michael Hutchinson from the Toronto Maple Leafs, just based on how you expected the deadline to go. Were you surprised by how relatively quiet it was for the Avalanche?
Not necessarily, because Joe Sakic had even indicated days before when he spoke to media that they were trying to look for maybe adding a middle six forward as well as getting a depth goaltender, just because of what went on with Philip Grubauer, his injury, and the fact that it looks like Grubauer, along with Nazem Kadri, Matt Calvert, and Mikko Rantanen, are all going to be out until mid-March. What made what the Avalanche did a little surprising, Adam and Robbie, is this. When you look at their cap space, they have right now $27 million in cap space. That's one of the highest amounts in the NHL, according to Cap Friendly. And people thought, okay, they were going to make this splash. And certainly if Chris Kreider doesn't sign that extension with the Rangers, you would think they would have been in on Chris Kreider for certain. But at the same time, one of the things that Joe Sakic and his front office staff have really sort of balanced is keeping one eye on the present, but one eye on the future. And what I mean by that is, they look at their cap number and they realize it's a healthy cap number, but they're also looking ahead and saying Andrei Burakovsky's on pace to have a 27 goal season. They're probably going to pay him between $4 and $5 million next year. And he's an RFA. Ryan Graves right now is making $735,000 and he's your first pairing partner with Cale Makar, leads the league in plus minus, does all these different things on the PK, you name it. He's someone that's got to get paid. He's got to make a decision on Nikita Zadorov. Valeri Nichushkin is making $850K. He's an RFA that they certainly want to keep. So it's looking at this class of guys that also includes Tyson Jost and Vladislav Kamenev. But then again, it's also looking to the future because, look, in 21-22, Gabriel Landeskog becomes a UFA. Ian Cole's a UFA. Grubauer's a UFA. And then, of course, Cale Makar's an RFA. And, of course, they're already thinking about what the McKinnon contract's going to look at by the end of the 2022-23 season. So that's just it. It's everybody looks at this one moment, but really for them, it's about the big picture.
Ryan, you mentioned the litany of injuries that the Colorado Avalanche are currently dealing with. You mentioned Matt Calvert. You mentioned Philip Grubauer. You mentioned Nazem Kadri. Mikko Rantanen, our old friend Colin Wilson. I believe Andrei Burakovsky, right, has also been on the injured list as well recently.
Well, yeah, because he's had more or less like an illness, but the thought is he will play this weekend. Whether it be in Carolina, Nashville, Detroit, at some point, it could be one of those three, all three of those three, or two of those three.
Well, the point is, with all of that, Nathan McKinnon, who we know is one of the most talented players in the National Hockey League, is continuing to play like the MVP candidate that he's probably going to be perennially. He has, if I'm not mistaken, 85 points this season, despite missing so many weapons around him. What level has Nathan McKinnon reached this season when you consider all of the injuries that have been the problem for the Avalanche?
It's interesting because in some ways you want to say it's maybe the best he's played given the numbers, but when you look at just what he's done, it's just really an advancement of what he's been achieving since the 17-18 season. I mean, he had 97 points that year in 74 games. If he doesn't get injured, you're talking about a 100-point season, and maybe that's the year he wins the Hart Trophy as opposed to finishing runner-up to Taylor Hall. He did this last year when injuries not only saw Gabriel Landeskog and Mikko Rantanen miss time, but this team wasn't as deep as it was last year. And so it really was on him, along with Philip Grubauer and Tyson Barry, to really sort of push them into the playoffs over those last six or so weeks. And that's what saw him finish with a 99-point season over 82. 85 over 62, you look at that number and you're just like, yeah, given the losses, I mean, yes, he's definitely in that conversation. But then when you look at the rest of the league, I mean, right now everyone's staring at Leon Draisaitl and wondering, like, is this the year for him? Some people think it's, you know, a possibility McDavid wins it because, again, look at what he does on a nightly basis. So, again, what you've seen from Nathan McKinnon is this, like, you're seeing him continue to launch these high-volume shots. You're seeing him be effective in different areas. But, like, the difference is this. Like, he's still doing this with injuries to his line mates. But at the same time, the thing that helps him is this is the most amount of supporting cast he's ever had since he's been with the Avalanche.
Ryan Clark on the line with us, covers the Colorado Avalanche for The Athletic. And Ryan, obviously a guy that's very familiar around these parts in Nashville and talked about a lot is Sam Girard, obviously included in the trade to Colorado that eventually led to Kyle Turris coming here to Nashville. How would you describe Sam Girard's progression since he's been in Colorado and specifically the year that he's having this year on the blue line?
You know, Robbie, his progression has been really kind of fascinating to watch because when he first came to Denver, the thought was, okay, what are you going to get from a guy like this? Because in Nashville, you knew he wasn't going to get a lot of playing time just because that blue line was so stacked. He comes to Colorado, and as a 19-year-old, he's already a first-pairing defenseman who's playing 17 minutes a night. Then you look at what he did last year. I mean, he saw his minutes increase. He was, again, playing those first-pairing minutes, whereas if this year, he's gone more to a second-pairing role because, again, with Cale Makar and Ryan Graves, that's kind of changed the dynamic. But what you're seeing is Samuel Girard playing 21 minutes a night. You've seen his defensive game improve. But more importantly, what you're seeing is you're seeing this sort of puck-moving prowess that everyone was expecting to see really sort of shine through him. I mean, he's already at 30 points through 62 games. But the thing, again, with him is it's not just so much the puck-moving, while that has gotten better. It's seeing how much better he plays on the defensive end. And not only that, but the real test with him is going to be what is it going to look like come playoffs? Because, again, Girard is listed at 5'9", 166. He said last summer that he put on more weight. In his mind, he felt he was closer to 180. But again, everybody thinks they're bigger or taller than what they are in professional sports. But the thing is when you look at that San Jose series that he and Cale Makar were in last year, one of the advantages of that partnership was they can create chances for themselves and for everyone with them. One of the disadvantages is there was a goal the Sharks scored on a high-low pass that led to a shot from the point that Evander Kane was able to get the rebound. And if you look at that sequence, Evander Kane was able to out-muscle a guy like Cale Makar, while Samuel Girard was struggling in his own right with the forward he was against. So again, it's one of those things where you're seeing him look a little bit more defensively responsible. I think having more defensively responsible teammates this year compared to last year, where again, it's a deeper roster, certainly helps, but that's where you're seeing that progress is he's starting to become more of this two-way player. But again, he's always going to be evaluated in terms of his production. And right now he's having the best season of his career. He's doing it in the last year of his deal. And more importantly, if you're the Avalanche, you're looking at this going, okay, it was a wise idea to sign him to that 7-year deal worth $5 million annually like they did last July.
Ryan, we mentioned earlier the goaltending situation. Philip Grubauer out with injury for the next little bit, traded for Michael Hutchinson. How are the Avalanche going to approach the goaltending situation while Grubauer is down, and how much of a challenge do you think that's going to be for them?
You know, it's interesting because looking at this weekend is going to be certainly an interesting view at what their strategy is going to be. Because, look, with Pavel Francouz, I mean, he's done everything you could ask of and more. I mean, he's 17-5-3, 2.26 goals against, a 9.27 save percentage. And he has won his last four starts where he's given up four goals, recorded his first shutout. I mean, he's done everything he wanted. So he's certainly going to play. And Jared Bednar has indicated he has no problem playing Francouz because the more you play him, the more comfortable he gets. But at the same time, you do want to see what you have in Michael Hutchinson. And that's really going to be the question. Because look, again, you think about what his year has been this year and the numbers are telling 4-9-1, a 3.66 GAA, a 0.886 save percentage. Those aren't exactly ideal numbers, but maybe if you're the Colorado Avalanche, your thought process is, well, A, you needed that depth, and B, maybe this is a guy who looks different in front of an Avalanche defense, which is a little bit more put together, to put it mildly, compared to the Maple Leafs, which every time you turn around, whether it's inconsistent player injuries, they're six. It's always something with them. So maybe they feel that could be the change. Who knows? But they're going to have to find out at some point.
Ryan Clark has been our guest here on the Smash Brothers on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Avalanche play tonight in Raleigh against the Carolina Hurricanes before coming to Nashville to play the Predators at 6 p.m. I can't stress that enough, people. 6 p.m.
game time.
6 p.m. tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you tomorrow.
You got it, guys. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks, Ryan.
Robbie, the most interesting thing to me about the Colorado Avalanche is when the Predators saw them in the playoffs a couple of years ago, you could tell that they were a team on the rise, but just based on how they've grown since that playoff series, it's clear that they're ahead of schedule.
They are, and I think obviously the biggest part of that is Nathan MacKinnon, what he's been able to do, 85 points this year, as you mentioned in our interview with Ryan Clark. He's just been so great. And you're talking about a guy that, you know, Gabriel Landeskog has missed time this year. Miko Rantanen has missed time this year. He's out again. Some of the guys that he's grown accustomed to playing with and being what I think you can make a pretty good argument is the best line in all of hockey. He hadn't had that for a whole lot this year, and he's been able to be productive despite of that. And obviously there's a lot of good players now around Nathan MacKinnon. We saw MacKinnon a couple years ago when he came in here and played the Predators in the playoffs, and we knew that he was special, and we knew this Colorado team was going to be good because he was a part of it moving forward. I think they've accelerated that by the talent they've been able to put around Nathan MacKinnon and Landeskog and Rantanen, especially when all three of those guys are healthy. So Jared Bednar, their coach, deserves a lot of credit for what he's been able to do in that area, and they're a fun team to watch. They're probably my favorite team to watch in the Western Conference with the way they play offensively.
It should be a great game tomorrow. The Predators, of course, passed their first test by defeating the Calgary Flames last night. Now they play the Colorado Avalanche tomorrow again at 6 p.m. at Bridgestone Arena. When we come back for our final segment here on the Smash Brothers, we will take your Twitter questions. We've received some good ones. We'll get to as many as we can. I'm Adam Vingan. That's Robbie Stanley. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Final segment of the day here on the Smash Brothers on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside the legendary Adam Vingan from The Athletic, whose hair continues to look fantastic here on a Friday night in Nashville, Tennessee. Adam, it's been a good show so far. How you doing? Your hair looks great.
Thank you.
You give me weird looks when I'm complimenting you.
I actually need a haircut. Legendary is not an adjective I would use to describe myself, but I'm flattered. Thank you.
Well, that's what I'm here for. It's all about the flattery of Adam Vingan.
Affirmation is very important to me.
It is. So we asked for your Twitter questions earlier in the day, and a good response again. Thank you all so much for participating in our show. We greatly appreciate it here at the Smash Brothers on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And a popular topic on Twitter, obviously, after the game last night was Mikael Granlund. Nate wrote in and said, how much more do you need to see before you fully believe in signing Granlund? Jack writes in and says, is it a legitimate possibility to have both Craig Smith and Mikael Granlund back next season? I want to dive into that one a little bit with you, Adam.
Yes.
Because my first response to that would be, it's going to be almost impossible to have both Craig Smith and Granlund back next season.
Mm-hmm.
You probably would have to pick one or the other, and Craig Smith, I think we both would agree, is going to be the cheaper option when that comes around in free agency. But I do wonder, the more that Granlund starts to play well, fit in with this system with John Hines, he's got 11 goals since John Hines took over as coach. At what point, if you're David Poile, do you have to sit around and wonder, okay, I understand that we might have to do some salary cap gymnastics here and try to make this work, but this might be worth moving somebody to bring Granlund back and sign next season? That, I mean, I'm not saying they're at that point yet with Granlund, and a lot of that's going to depend on how the team as a whole does to close out the season. But if he keeps playing this way, you at least have to have that thought in your head if you're David Poile, don't you?
You do, and right now the Predators have a projected cap hit of roughly $72.2 million entering next season, according to Cap Friendly. Now, of course, they're expected to have more space because the cap should go up, but right now they have a cap hit of roughly $79 million, so that's only a difference of about $7 million. Now, Granlund, who makes $5.75 million against the cap, is doing himself a lot of favors by playing this well down the stretch in a contract year. So I think it is possible to retain Mikael Granlund. I agree with you that it's probably going to be, I don't want to say impossible, but improbable that both Mikael Granlund and Craig Smith return next year. And Craig Smith, as you mentioned, will cost less, will definitely cost less than Mikael Granlund on his next contract, considering his age. Mikael Granlund is, just turned 28.
Yes.
And Craig Smith will be 31 before next season starts. But in order to sign Mikael Granlund to a long-term contract where he's going to want to raise from his $5.75 million annual salary, you're going to have to move out some significant salary. Now, the easy one, just in terms of, well, it's not going to be easy, but the first one that comes to mind is Kyle Turris.
Yes.
Who has a $6 million cap hit through, I believe, 2024. Now, the likelihood of the Predators being able to trade Kyle Turris without retaining salary seems slim. And David Poile has never retained salary in a trade. Of course, last year, the reason why he traded PK Subban to the New Jersey Devils was because they were the only team that was interested in him that were willing to take on his entire $9 million cap hit.
Right.
So you would have to find a team that would be willing to take on all, if not most, or most, if not all, of Kyle Turris's $6 million cap hit. If they are able to find a taker, which would probably require also that they throw in a sweetener, whether it's a prospect or a draft pick, to encourage another team to take Kyle Turris. If you are able to accomplish that, then I think you can re-sign Mikhail Granlund to the contract that he's looking for. But other than that, it's going to be hard to make it work, I feel like. And David Poile is going to have a really interesting decision to make.
Our friend Pred Kelly writes in on Twitter and says, the team doesn't scare me offensively because I think the top guys will come around, and he put in parentheses, hopefully. I think all Preds fans are hoping for that. But the decor worries me, especially three specific players, Hamus, Fabro, and Tenorti. Can/will they shore that up?
Well, at this point, they really don't have much choice because the trade deadline has passed. Now, there are options in the American League, but I don't see one of Alex Carrier or Frederick Allard or Jeremy Davies being recalled at this point of the season.
Probably not.
Unless it's an absolute emergency. And remember, teams have a limited number of recalls that they can make to the American Hockey League at this point. Connor Ingram was an emergency recall the other night when Pecorine was sick. So that does not count towards the total, but they have to be judicious in how many recalls they have and who they recall.
And I would expect the next guy that gets called up is going to be Trennan. I mean, he's going to be back up here at some point before the season is over. I mean, how does Corbin and Holzer factor in? Is that they got him at the trade deadline, sent him, or got him back here for Matt Irwin? You look at the analytics, they're not good, let me tell you.
No, they're not.
I would not look at those if I was a Predators fan. But he does have size. He does have, you know, a grit to him, I guess, that some people like. I've had a lot of people tweeting me all week, why didn't the Predators get more grit at the trading deadline, which is a far cry from what I used to get tweeted about at the Preds and the trading deadline. It's amazing how much it's come full circle.
Too much grit.
But, look, any way you slice it, Hamus has not had a good year. No. Tenorti, I think, he's played okay. He is what he is. He's not going to wow you. Probably doesn't need to be playing in the top four with Matthias Ekholm. But Fabro is the one that most people have the conversation about. And my response is, you know, he's a 21-year-old kid, and he's been pretty much exactly what I thought he would be in terms of there have been games where he's looked very good. There have been games where he's looked pretty bad. I mean, there's a lot of in between, but, you know, you expect that kind of roller coaster ride when you have a young player, especially a young player at that position. I still contend, more so than being a forward, more so than coming in and being a goaltender, I think coming in and playing a significant role on defense as a younger player is the hardest thing to do in the NHL.
And when the Predators traded PK Subban that day in Vancouver, David Poile said something to the effect of, if not for Dante Fabro, I wouldn't have traded PK Subban.
Which automatically creates expectations.
Right. And no one expected Dante Fabro to come right in and replace PK Subban. That was impossible or near impossible. He's had an uneven season, but that's what happens for most rookies.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been smooth sailing, but I don't think it was expected to be smooth sailing. He'll get better. He is young, as you mentioned. And I think being in a third pairing role, albeit, as you mentioned, Jared Tenorti, Matthias Ekholm, I wouldn't have Tenorti playing as many minutes as he is, but at least Dante Fabro is in a third pairing capacity, which is, I guess, the bright side of having Jared Tenorti.
Yeah.
It's a half glass full, half glass empty kind of thing. But I'm not as worried about Dante Fabro as some may be.
Last question that we're going to have time to get to today. Daniel writes in, even though the Preds are getting wins and better goaltending, the time they spend chasing the puck each game is concerning. Will this ultimately be what sinks them this year, in your opinion?
We were talking about that earlier.
We were. And look, there's no question. They've got to find a way to spend less time chasing the puck around in the D zone. I mean, eventually, that's going to catch up to you. and your goaltending will falter a little bit, and you're going to end up down four goals in a game. There's nothing you're going to be able to do about it. You got to find a way to spend more time in the offensive zone. I think when you look at the Predators coming in the zone, especially as of late, how often have they really had a shift where they really hem the opponent in the offensive zone? They cycle it around. They move it around. They spend 30 to 45 seconds in the zone at a time. Hadn't happened a whole lot. A lot of one and dones as of late. You come in, maybe you get one chance. Maybe you don't even get a chance. The puck goes off to the corner, and all of a sudden you're going back the other way. They've got to find a better way, I think, to establish their cycle game in the zone, to establish wearing and grinding the other team down. You don't have to come in there and just play along the walls and just pass the puck around all the time. That doesn't really do anybody any good. You're looking to find some quality chances. But I think they do need to do a better job of making sure that they're possessing the puck in the offensive zone with more regularity and with more frequency in terms of how often they're there.
And I think the quality of shot has improved under John Hines,
yes,
as my analytically inclined friends will tell me. So there has been a sacrifice of quantity, I feel like. I don't have the numbers in front of me, so I might be mistaken. But I believe the quantity has declined, but the quality has improved, even if it's only slightly. So I'm okay. We talked about this before. I'm okay with sacrificing quantity for quality, but I agree with you that they need to spend more time establishing possession in the offensive zone. We saw it last night. The Flames were able to do that. The Predators would gain possession of the puck, and as soon as they got it back, within a few seconds, it seemed to be going back the other way.
Yep.
They need to be able to do what the Flames did last night and establish possession in the offensive zone, work the puck around, get a couple of quality looks. Even if you don't score, you build momentum that way, as coaches like to talk about, so that the next time you get into the offensive zone, maybe you get an even better look. So I agree with Daniel that it is a bit concerning, and that's why we were hesitant to say they turned the corner earlier in the show. If they can shore that up, as well as some other things, I think they'll be in good shape, but I would agree that that's something that they need to correct.
Adam, very quickly, what do you want to see out of the Predators tomorrow when they take on Colorado?
Well, even though John Hines said last night that, you know, the game last night is the game last night, and that's not going to help them win against Colorado. The preparation is going to help them win against Colorado. I really want to see if there is some momentum that was generated from that game. And it was a big test last night against Calgary, considering where they are in the standings. Colorado's an even bigger test as one of the top three teams in the Central Division. And as we talked about earlier, a team that waxed them earlier this year by scoring 9 goals, which I believe was the worst in franchise history.
Yeah, and they were up 3-2 in that game at one point. That's kind of hard to believe.
It is hard
to
believe.
And lost 9-4.
Yeah, that's not good. Not good. So I would like to see a continuation of some of the things I saw last night in terms of the mental fortitude, as John Hines always says, and seeing if they can rise to another big game against a top opponent.
We'll see what happens tomorrow. Puck drop at 6 o'clock. Keep that in mind. That's going to do it for us today here on the Smash Brothers. Adam, it was a lot of fun, man. Thanks.
Robbie, did you hear the game tomorrow? Is that 6 o'clock?
I heard about that. Thank
All
you.
Right. 6 o'clock.
We'll be back next week, next Friday night at 6 o'clock. You're listening to the Smash Brothers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.